Don't go on the water cycle because it's time for Grain of Truth. Please welcome your host, David Innes!
Hello and welcome to Grain of Truth, the show that where the truth has lost that loving feeling. Your Grains of Truth today. Two puddings were in the family court today having a custody battle. A group of Satanists who worship an evil drake call him the Duck Lord. Scotch eggs are what you get when whiskey gives birth. A decision on who changes the light bulbs in the house is an example of global politics. And Greater is a dating app for cheese. To introduce our panellists for this episode, it's over to the endoplasmic reticulum, John Franklin.
Thank you very much, David. Now, from Monash University representing medicine, it's Dr. Brad McKay. From RMIT University representing performing arts, it's Stacey Taylor. From Melbourne University representing literature, it's Tim Redman. And from Monash University representing animals, it's Gary Farnsworth!
The rules of Grain of Truth are simple. I award points to the panellists for their responses to ridiculously absurd questions, scenarios and topics. Whoever has the most points wins the coveted Grain of Truth prize, which this week is a sense of accomplishment. You ingested after being berated on your life choices by mother. Maybe that's just me. Before we begin the quiz, here's a small challenge for everyone. Can you name the grain of truth that connects all four of our panellists' surnames? That's McKay, Taylor, Redmond, and Farnsworth. And we'll return to this at the end of the program, but I will give you a clue. Showtime. That is the clue. But now we'll begin with round one, which is called the 90-second TED Talk. Each player must give a short speech on a topic relating to their field in 90 seconds. At 60 seconds, they will hear this noise. At the 90-second mark, they'll hear... And at that point, they must cease and desist. First speaker is Dr. Brad McKay, representing medicine, and your topic is that arrogance is actually a symptom of a larger illness. Dr. Brad McKay? Dr. Brad McKay, your time starts now.
Okay. I was at a party, and a beautiful girl walked into the room, and I was immediately attracted to her, and I set up a conversation. And so... to protect her identity, we'll call her Penelope. So we talked for about 10 minutes, and I thought things were going remarkably well, until she leaned in close and then whispered into my ear, "There are a lot of other interesting people at this party. Maybe you should go and talk to them." Yeah, that's what I thought as well. So I was wondering what was going on, and Penelope was obviously exhibiting arrogance. And I wondered what, ever since this embarrassing meeting that I've had with her, I wondered what could have possibly caused her to lose interest in me. And we all know it's quite impossible for me to bore anyone with my riveting conversation. So I realised that there must be a larger illness here that we need to investigate, something else that could be causing this venomous response. So I concluded that Penelope must be suffering from scabies. Sarcoptes scabii is a microscopic mite that buries itself deep into your skin, and it's usually found in your armpits, in your groin, on your wrists, and especially between the webs of your fingers. And so it's clear that the scabies mite was causing Penelope to be distracted and irritable in the conversation, and she was actually wanting to distance herself from me to protect me from her infestation. So the next time you're at a party and somebody rejects you or they're arrogant, then just realise that they've obviously got scabies. And so just stop the party, stop the conversation, get everyone around, and then announce to the room that this person is arrogant. But it's not because they're a horrible person. It's just because they're suffering from scabies infection. They'll thank you for it.
I'm notoriously difficult at parties.
Are you trying to tell us something?
No.
I
think it's generally it's the science person in me. I find I have nothing to do and I always feel very awkward. Does anyone have strategies of how they deal with party situations?
Alcohol.
Well, I suppose that literally is a solution as well.
I once walked up to a group of people and said, "Did you know that you can make a penguin from a banana?" And then proceeded to origami a penguin out of a banana. That didn't go down very well. So
your solution is being a little bit creepy.
I'm with that.
That and tremendous dancing ability.
Fabulous. Next speaker is Stacey Taylor, representing Performing Arts, and your topic is theatre in a parallel universe. Stacey, your time starts then.
Okay, so I've often come here to Grain of Truth to report on exciting new and often unjustly discredited studies, and today I think you'll find is no exception. In an unprecedented collaboration between theatre scholars and quantum physicists, theatre has been discovered in parallel universes. For instance, in a neighbouring universe notable for its digital-free and paperless planets, theatre is the primary system for the delivery of news bulletins. Thus, drama schools have an elevated emphasis on impersonation and mimicry, and cosmetic surgery is rife in the profession, with theatre actors commissioning the faces of monarchs, world leaders, high-profile criminals, and on several bizarre occasions, endangered species. Another compelling discovery from the study is the existence of the No Suspension of Disbelief universe, which has seen a growing underbelly of illegal musical theatre. One production was able to enter the mainstream through a technical legal loophole whereby one character spent the entire narrative crying out, "But why is everyone singing? And can't we just talk about it? And won't we get more work done more efficiently if we all stop dancing, etc." One-person shows are also a risky endeavour in this universe, and there has not been a fringe theatre scene ever since the public lynching of a solo actor who pivoted on their standing foot to become another character. So for more fascinating findings, you can refer to the joint paper released by the Australia Council and Quantum Physics RS once they find a publisher.
What do you think you would find if you found your parallel universe version of you? What would be the parallel universe version of you? Like, I imagine if for me it would be someone, you know, entirely track-suited. Possibly, I imagine an athlete, a chronic athlete. Who would be your parallel version of you?
I just imagine mine would wear a lot of white.
I think I'd be very arrogant and covered in skating.
Our next speaker for today is Tim Redmond. He's representing literature. And your topic is A Book Makes You More Manly. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Redmond.
I was reading The Age a little while ago, and there was a gentleman who had written an article about sitting in a cafe reading a book, and he was getting lots of female attention. We no longer live on the Serengeti Plains in a supercontinent where to get a mate, to propagate the species, which is the purpose of being male, being manly, was to just donk your mate on the head with a stick and then drag her away. No, we no longer live in that world. The thing that women are searching for now is demonstration of intelligence, perhaps, curiosity. So how can one be more manly? How can one demonstrate what evolution now thrusts upon us is the prime force? A book. A book. Carry a book with you at all times. But what book? Once we've now scientifically established that a book indeed makes you more manly, which book? Would you fill your pocket with perhaps some dog-eared Dostoevsky? Would that attract a mate? Would you grab yourself a fistful of Bukowski or maybe the Little Book of Hugs? Let us return to this article. What was the book? What was the book that was getting this man all this female attention and thus making him more manly? I give to you, blokes, the book you should have in your pocket to be more of a man is 50 Shades of Grey.
Has anyone actually actually been able to share, either with a close friend or perhaps an intimate friend, a particular book that you've both bonded over? Have you bonded over a book of anything?
Are we talking bondage or bonded?
No, bonded.
Okay, sure. Yeah. I think Harry Potter has really come through for me. Like, I've had amazing animated conversations about Harry Potter and about all of the incantations that can be done.
Yeah.
Okay, can a question to you, David. Yes. What book would you see a prospective partner in a cafe reading that would overcome your shyness? You see that book, I must talk to that person.
Oh, that would definitely have to be a Jeeves and Wooster or a P.G. Woodhouse, because I know that down... Or, ironically, 1984.
What's ironic about it?
Because it's such an incredibly sad dystopian universe, and I love the book to death. It's a fabulous book, and it's a great... I would think that was a conversation starter. But it says something about me than anything else.
You could make great thought crimes together.
Absolutely. And now, our final speaker in the first round is Kerry Farnsworth, representing animals, and your topic is the evolution of the meanness reuptake inhibitor in horses. And Kerry, your time starts now.
So the capacity for meanness in most animals goes up the larger the animal gets. So it becomes more capable of becoming intimidating, so therefore it's more likely to exhibit its meanness, except for horses and some species of dog. Animals that have convergent evolution with humans, that is to say their evolution has been affected by humans and humans' evolution is affected by theirs, are affected by meanness reuptake inhibitors excreted by humans as pheromones due to the evolution of the human's ego. Dogs and horses, but horses in particular, contain the same amount of meanness regardless of their size. So as the animal gets smaller, the more concentrated its meanness becomes, making the smallest of Shetland ponies the meanest little jerks, and the largest of Shire horses calm and patient, but still capable of horrendous acts of meanness. Similarly with dogs, as humans learn from dogs to become pack animals, dogs were bred by humans to become complacent and floppy-eared and squashy-faced. But what humans didn't realise they were doing when they were making dogs a vanity project was that they were stunting the dog's ability to absorb meanness. So the little dogs became meaner and meaner. So evolutionary biologists theorise that the reason behind this is the integral part of the domestication of dogs and horses in human evolution. So most animals have no concept of ego related to their size, but dogs and horses in humans do because of their inability to absorb meanness. See also short man syndrome. The evolution of the ego stunts the dissipation of meanness and mutes meanness reuptake receptors in the brain, and they get smaller and smaller and less efficient, so the animal's meanness remains static regardless of their size.
Has anyone, when it comes to animals and things like that, I am not a cat person, mainly because I'm allergic, and it's hard to communicate with cat people because they're like, oh my god, you're clearly the worst person in the world. Has anyone got like a dislike of a certain type of animal that other people love?
Axolotls.
Axolotls?
Yeah, because you can't pet them because they'll die. Like, you burn their skin. It's like the most useless pet. My sister got one and she put it back. She took it back to the pet shop because it just sat there and did nothing. And that's
mine's
all
actually quite snippy.
Does.
You can't put anything in the tank with her because otherwise she'll eat it. Yeah. She had her name is Paul Keating, and I gave her a snail companion as Dr. John Hewson. And after not particularly long of Keating harassing Dr. John Hewson, he shut up his little snail trap and died.
So much like history, really. And that's the end of that round, so it's over to John with the scores. John.
At the end of that round, it's Kerry Farnsworth ahead in the lead by a teaspoon.
Our next round is the analysis and application round. Our panel is divided into teams of two and must apply their skills to an application task. Brad and Stacey, I'll be challenging you to recount an event as if it was a children's story. And the event that I would like you to do as a children's story is an alien invasion. An alien invasion as a children's story, please.
Once upon a time, little Johnny looked up into the sky.
And what he saw terrified the bejesus out of him. It was a large, flappy, maternal alien.
Maternal alien? And out of the bottom of the maternal alien came a whole lot of little aliens with sharp teeth and gnashes. It was dark.
Johnny was terrified. The alien introduced herself as Penelope. And her first words were, "I'm itchy."
Penelope spread her fingers, and from the webbing from her palms came little tiny scabies mites. They started to infect little Johnny.
This is cruel children's story ever. As children cowered in their beds, listening to the story, little Timmy looked up and realised it wasn't just a story. For there she was outside of his window. Adults all over Melbourne looked out their window and saw the very same.
He reached for his teddy bear called Permethrin and rubbed the teddy bear all over his fingers and all over his body as a protection. And unfortunately, Penelope, she couldn't withstand the fight of that insecticide.
And that's why, children, you should always use prescribed medicine.
Thank you, Rex.
I'm troubled by that public service announcement.
It's an important story for all children.
Yeah.
Scabies and you.
Mummy, why do I itch so much?
Now, dip your teddy bear in the permethrin again.
Or else it gets the hose again. Now, Tim and Kerry, I'll be challenging you to translate these words from different languages and what do they mean. So the first one is a German word, which is Floppenheit.
Ah, fluff hang height?
F-L-O-F, hang height.
Ah, fluff hang height is the charge that is generated by cat hair as you're trying to wipe it off of your trousers without the aid of a lint roller. So the fluff hang height is how it stays on you. It's how it stays on your trousers no matter what you do.
Mm. Fabulous. Next one is the Japanese word koyotakanaka.
First coined in a Kuro Kurosawa's movie, The Seven Samurai. It was a battle cry. Can you say it again?
Koyotakanaka.
Yes, and that little pause and giggle is important.
Oh,
yes.
Is
it? As you cry from the hill, the enemies drop their guard. In that pause and giggle, you charge, screaming out, Koya Kugataka!
The Finnish word, Huilungat.
Huilungat. Can you spell that for me?
Huilungat.
Oh.
Huilungat. If you'd said that in the first place.
I'm sorry, my Finnish is not always up to scratch.
Grain of racism.
Now that is the Finnish word for the rumbling of your stomach when you're when you realise you've drank too much coffee and you're not really in the vicinity of a toilet.
Finally, in the Welsh word chlwyn chlwyn.
Spell it, please.
L L L L L L L L L L L.
Double L Y. W-E-N-double-L-Y-N-double-L-Y-N.
This is a mythical beast that lives in lochs and will attack only fishermen who are morally inferior to the local potato grower, I believe.
Yes.
But he must be called... Is it William or Peter?
I thought it was Peter.
It's Peter.
It's Peter.
If you're morally inferior to the local potato grower called Peter, don't go in the lock because
that guy will get you.
And the number two, Kerry.
Science.
And linguistics. And that's the end of that round, so it's over to John with the scores. John.
Thank you very much, David. Now, at the end of that round, Tim Redmond is actually now in the lead with sine pi over 6.
That sounds like quite a bit.
It is.
It's got a maximum of 1. It's a trigonometric function. Never mind.
No, please continue.
Oh, really? So what happens, right, is that it goes in a... Our next round is called How Delightful. Each team is given 60 seconds to say as many delightful things as they can about the topic given. If they don't say a delightful thing, I shall interrupt and I'll pass on to the other team where they will get the remaining time.
Alternatively, if the other team wants to ding in, they can steal the topic away and justify. First topic will be for Stacey and Brad, and you have to say as many delightful things as possible about a suburban shopping mall.
I love it how there's always Degani's and bad coffee.
Oh, I'm sorry, we can't. This is Melbourne. That is clearly not delightful to have bad coffee. I'm going to have to move it on to the other team. You have got 54 seconds to continue saying how many delightful things about a suburban shopping mall.
It's always a place for teenagers to go.
You can get definitely up. Not delightful.
That's true. Teenagers aren't delightful. We shall continue on.
At least it puts them all in the one place.
Well, I suppose. Oh, it's either that or, you know, under the clocks at Flinders Street Station. Now, we'll move on to back to Stacey and Brad. You've got the topic again.
It's great for exercise. Mm.
If you want to avoid natural light, you're guaranteed success.
Sometimes if you want to go there at 4 in the morning, it's perfect. Mainly around Christmas time. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Anything of a bright colour is usually available.
Oh, come on, we're all thinking it. Santa Claus. Santa only comes to two places, the homes of good children and suburban shopping. So if you're a bad kid, where do you go? You go to the mall, not to be judged, no! To find hope in the little red man. Santa Claus. And Dunkin' Donuts. And food courts.
Oh, air conditioning.
Air conditioning. Oh, and yes. Old people.
Oh, I'm sorry, sorry.
It's delightful, David, because they teach the young troubled kid who didn't believe in Santa that there is someone, and they point over there next to the donuts.
That's worth two extra points.
And crystal meth.
Oh, I'm sorry. We can't possibly have crystal meth for the last 3.5 seconds. The other team.
Escalators.
Yep.
Way of getting from A to B without exerting anything.
And that's the end of the tour. Scores so far, we have Stacey and Brad on 6 delightful things, Tim and Kerry on 7 delightful things.
We get them.
Now your topic, Tim and Kerry, you need to say as many delightful things as possible about a fireplace.
It's warm, unlike that one over there.
You can lay down a beautiful lady and play some jazz.
There's often like some sort of a rug out the front of it, and it reminds you of like being really primal and setting fires and inventing wheels and developing language and culture.
Oh, that sounds like far too much hard work.
That is true. That is exerting a lot of energy. I will pass it over. You've now got 40.28 seconds.
Fireplaces are usually surrounded by holidays or alpine lodges.
Correct, but...
I was going to stop there. What was your reason?
Alpine lodges are just full of really awful people.
That's true. It was a bit too middle class. I'm terrible.
It's been middle class. The game used to be easier.
For the remaining 34 seconds, continue back onto the other team.
A fireplace is a really nice place to burn all of your old documents to try and hide evidence. That's delightful.
getting away scot-free with terrible crime.
Yes.
I'm sorry, we'll stop that there. We'll continue back over. If the IRA... I was going to say IRA, but yes. I don't think this bit has been edited out for sensitive viewers, listeners. Oh, God, I'm stopping. Returning back to the other team. Fireplaces, continue.
Nobody's mentioned marshmallows. Nor nostalgia.
Marshmallows and nostalgia are what's delightful about fireplaces, David.
Oh, there we go. Well done, you've done it that back. Now.
And not only marshmallow and nostalgia, but barley sugar and
fireworks. Originals. Santa Claus again.
And damper, apparently. Damper, that amazing Australian tradition that I was introduced to as a New Zealand teenager.
And that's the end of time!
An official protest.
Yes.
I think fireworks and open fireplaces are a terrible combination.
That's why you're a cynic, Stacey.
This is a first for how delightful. Both of you have got the same number of points.
Yes.
Both got 12 delightful things each in that round.
Excellent.
Which is exciting.
How delightful.
There's the 13th, so welcome. And I'm going to transfer those points
goes to the supercomputer so I can send it over to John with the points update. John, who is at the end of that round?
Thank you very much, David. At the end of that round, Tim Redman is in the lead by pure coincidence!
That still sounds like quite a lot.
Well, it is pure.
The purest of coincidences.
And now it's time to reveal the answer to our Grain of Truth Connection Challenge. Firstly, did anyone on the panel get the connection between our panellists' surnames? That's Mackay, Taylor, Redmond and Farnsworth. Anyone on the panel?
No.
Well, actually, the connection what I was looking for was American actors. And I've got... there was actually some wonderfully, delightfully obscure American actors that are all connected. First of all, Gardner Mackay, who made 8 Atlantic crossings as a teenage sailor and starred in a TV series called Adventures in Paradise. His last film was in 1968, and it was called I Sailed to Tahiti with an All-Girl Crew.
Oh. How delightful.
Which Kurosawa remade as Seven Samurai.
That's right. Robert Taylor, one of the most popular leading men of his time.
Uncle Bob.
Was one of the first people to name names when it was asked to testify before the House of Un-American Activities Committee regarding communism in Hollywood.
What a shame.
His testimony about Howard De Silva was that, and I quote, he always had something to say at the wrong time. That was on record. Marcus Redmond was best known as the character Raymond Alexander in Doogie Howser, M.D. Oh. And his character first takes Doogie hostage in a convenience store robbery, but then later becomes his friend.
Oh.
As you do. And Richard W. Farnsworth, who started in the business when he was offered a job as a stuntman for $7 a day plus a boxed lunch. Oh. So there we go.
That's where my love of boxed lunches comes from.
So that's the end of the connection. So it's now over to John to furnish us with the declaration of who is our winner. John.
Thank you very much, David. Now the winner of the sense of accomplishment today is Stacey Taylor.
Where are you going to keep your sense of accomplishment?
I'm going to keep it deep in the recesses of my heart, David.
Oh, fabulous. Oh. Well, that is the end of the program, and I hope you enjoyed it. You can come and see the recording on the first Saturday of the month at 1 p.m. at the Wesleyan. Our website is www.grainoftruth.com.au, and you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/grainoftruthshow, and on Twitter at grainoftruths. And now it just leaves me to thank our panel, Dr. Brad Mackay, Stacey Taylor, Tim Redman, and Kerry Farnsworth, our announcer, John Franklin, our composer, Matthew Hedgraff, our logo designer, Tom Markovich, our sound restorer, Alvin Petit, Daniel Sutton, and the Wesleyan. I have been your host, David Innes. Have a splendid day! This has been a Scabies production.